place to go. Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go.
I just missed when I tried to turn my microphone on. Swung on and missed. Hi, 609. How many times I've turned a microphone on in the last 40 years? I think I know how to do it by now. Hi, how are you? Steve Cochran Show, Kid of the Week coming up. Also, Heather Sharon, who's somebody that Justin, what's his name, Kimball? Who's a nice guy here?
Kaufman.
Kaufman. Justin Kaufman introduced to the show when he did the show with me last year. And she's great.
She
can update us on everything related to the strike and why it didn't get solved yesterday afternoon. Didn't you sort of have a sense that it was going to be over?
Yeah, I did.
And nothing.
Yeah.
Steve, nothing.
Yeah, the CTU president last night said that his optimism earlier in the day was over. What was it? He said it was unwarranted.
Hmm.
So something happened yesterday.
Adam Hogue later on the Bears. Dave, you put any stock in this idea that the Bears are going to trade for another quarterback?
I don't think so. Not right now. I mean,
and a trade deadline coming up?
There is a trade deadline coming up. I think the end of the week. It's coming up shortly.
What if they make a deal for me? I used to have a pretty good arm.
I think that's a possibility. I think you're on the radar, Steve. But I don't think so. And you know, it's very rare that a team goes out. I mean, it can happen. I mean, look, some teams have some backup quarterbacks who are playing really well. A kid at Carolina has done a great job.
So Cam Newton's available.
Well, Cam Newton may be available. Yeah, but, you know, Cam Newton, there's a reason he's not playing. He was hurt, and then they got hot with this other kid in there, and Cam Newton's got a lot of miles on him. He's had some injuries. You know, I mean, I still wonder about Colin Kaepernick, but I don't think he's necessarily going to be a midseason kind of solution.
Let me throw a couple names at you. Yep. Fran Tarkenton. Is Fran Tarkenton available?
Francis Tarkenton.
Y.A. Tittle.
He's really, I'm not sure his playing days are still ahead.
George Blanda.
No, I would say probably not.
Okay. All right. These are just ideas.
Yeah, no, they're great ideas.
Sure, of course they are.
At one time.
Breakfast of the Blackhawk later. A guy who I really like the looks of, this Ollie Mata. I know he calls himself Oli. I prefer to call him Ollie.
It's okay.
Oli Mata is a cancer survivor, and Hockey Fights Cancer Night is this Sunday with the Blackhawks. So we'll be on talking about that. Big O later as well. An interesting guy. I'm looking forward to talking to this guy. Rich McHugh, big-time producer at NBC, who bailed on NBC when they shut down his work with Ronan Farrow. And he's got a lot to say about that. And you can read about it in Vanity Fair. And he'll be on talking about that later. It's 6:11. Let's do the top six at 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't kick. Get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
If you're a teacher and you're on the picket lines today and you say, wow, that looks like Elizabeth Warren. I didn't know she taught in the school system. Turns out she's actually Elizabeth Warren, and she wants to be president. She's going to march with some picketers today. Where's that going to happen? Where's her appearance going to be? Is she going to jump line to line, Steve? Do we know?
She is going to be outside of Oscar DePriest Elementary School, which is in South Austin at about 9:30 this morning.
Well, Warren tweeted her support for striking teachers in the past in a Sunday afternoon video as well, urging teachers to be strong. She'll be in town today. I would assume this morning would be the key time she's in town. We'll find out. Next. A bag exploded while being loaded onto a flight at Midway. Turns out there are no reports or injuries. Police bomb squad was called to the scene. It was cleared about 1 p.m. yesterday afternoon and evening. They thought it was possibly a cell phone battery or a charger. Is that still the thought?
Yeah, it's just some sort of big battery like that. And it was apparently somehow caught and dragged by one of those airport vehicles. And so that's the contact between the battery, the bag, the battery, and the concrete of the ground, likely what caused that battery to explode.
Next. The duck seems slow today. Is the duck okay?
Have we fed the duck this morning?
He's ill.
Let me go to Super Joe on this. Super Joe, is the duck okay?
The duck is doing just fine.
All right.
Yep.
10 police officers from the Gresham and Morgan Park districts, along with firefighters, were honored yesterday with a CPD life-saving award. for their roles in saving a 14-year-old's life. 14-year-old boy suffered multiple gunshot wounds to the chest in the Gresham neighborhood earlier this month. Obviously continues to recover, but not without the life-saving efforts of those folks who do that every day. And obviously we should recognize them every chance we can. Next. Are we really out of stories where we're talking about a new area code? Is that really a top six story?
Sure.
Okay.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Oh.
If you're living at 217 in Central Illinois, there's a new area code there. It'd be 447. Again, breaking news. 217 gets a new area code. There's also going to be a 447. Could change a lot.
This does involve 37 counties, though. That's a huge part of Illinois.
Yeah, it's Champaign-Urbana, too.
Springfield.
That's big.
So does that mean some 217s will become 447, or there's so many that have that are now living in Central Illinois, they needed more?
I think that's the last part of that.
Or maybe the new phone numbers will just be 447.
This is all because of the win over Wisconsin on Saturday.
And it's important because if somebody dials you with a 447 phone number, you're like, well, where is that from? Now you'll know.
You're like, you think it's a telemarketer.
Right.
Excitement and someone local.
I've got a 630. I'd like a 447 instead. Can
I
trade? I
have a 312.
You're in a 312?
I'm a 312.
That's a fairly famous area code.
I can drink a 312 too.
Yeah, well, listen, we all have our issues. Next, World Series starts tonight. Astros in their third World Series. They won it a couple of years ago. They lost it to the White Sox in 2005.
Yes, they did.
Nationals have never played in a World Series before. First pitch is in Houston at 7:08 tonight. And this is why Cub fans ought to be worried. Houston was a young team on the up and coming when that famous Sports Illustrated cover came out. I believe in 2014, said 2017 World Series champion Houston Astros. Nailed it.
Yep.
Absolutely nailed it. All right. Cubs develop this young team with nothing but talent. They win in 2016, and they haven't sniffed it since.
No. Well, they sniffed it. They got back to the NLCS.
Got to get back to sniff it. Can't smell it from where they've been, Dave. So they've got a reason to be concerned and to get their act together because the clock's ticking. And finally this, Y-O-N-D-R, Yonder. Is that Yonder? Yonder could be the answer to you being addicted to your phone. It's a small pouch that swallows your phone and locks it up. Started back in 2014, hundreds of thousands of pouches have been used across North America, Europe, and Australia. People enter a school, a courtroom, a comedy show, a concert, a medical facility, a wedding, or other event are asked to slip their phones into the pouches when they enter. Once they're locked, they stay locked with their owners until ready to leave the premises, and the devices are released from their tiny prisons. The pouches can be rented for a single event or an extended lease. They're now used in over 600 schools as well. I don't understand how this works. So does the Yonder locker phone... Is it like a fanny pack or that you keep on you? Is that the situation?
It's not a fanny pack. It's literally like a pouch, and then you just put your phone in, and it's supposed to deactivate your phone for as long as you want it to.
But can't you take it out and leave?
You can take it out eventually whenever you're ready to use your phone again. But it just gives people the opportunity to
enjoy life.
Enjoy life, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here's an idea that's kind of crazy.
Turn it off.
Or willpower. I mean, it's just a phone. You can put it away for a couple hours.
How about put it in your purse? Why do we need a Yonder?
People are addicted to their phones.
Yes.
Just walk around and look at everybody looking down at their
phone.
You
need to have a reason not to pick up your phone. And if your phone has literally been deactivated for a period of time, there's your reason.
Do you ever go to, like... a funeral, and now it's pretty common at weddings.
People
say
funerals,
silence your phone.
Yeah, yeah.
But then constantly during whatever event you're attending, the phones are going off. It's like,
well, there's a famous funeral story, as you think you know, Bob Collins' funeral. Mary June Rose, who ran this place.
Yeah, I was there. I don't remember this.
Actually, I'm sorry, it wasn't Collins. Yeah, it was Harry.
Okay,
Harry Carey's funeral. Her phone went off. And she took it out of her purse and she sat on it because she was so nervous she couldn't figure out how to turn it off.
Oh, my gosh.
So it went from ring, 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 ring to...
But I mean, it's not new that you should turn it off.
Steve, I thought you would like this because a lot of comedians use this at their concerts. So, like, what you do is you put it in the pouch and then once you enter
that's a lie for comedians because when some idiot's phone goes off, that's 4 minutes of material right there.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, I know Dave Chappelle made people do this when he was practicing his material.
How much does a Yonder cost, Viv?
Let me double check that.
I mean, I don't want one. I'm just curious how much it costs.
I think you do.
Are you going to make this a phone-free zone? You're going to put a...
We talked about this Dave, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago, and I couldn't get everybody on the show to agree. I said, everybody puts their phones in a bucket or a basket or a hat or something at the beginning of the show, and let's see who goes to check it first.
It's impulse for me. Sometimes I'm not even wanting to check it. My body just goes through the motions of checking it.
Yeah. I'm that way with Cheetos.
I love Cheetos.
That's what I thought a yonder was at first, a big pouch that you dump it in, you know, until I looked it up. I'm like,
I think I've talked about this on here. I had an agent whose wife, when people would come over, would take their phones.
Wow.
So unless you're here to make a phone call, this is not a phone booth.
Right.
I'm happy to take your phone. You can have it when you leave.
I know a lot of people in their households have a place, like a you know, an area where everyone puts their phones, like in order to have dinner together or for study time or phone free time. But man, it is an impulse. Like it's hard to control. Even if you know, like you're not even wanting to check your phone, but you find yourself checking your phone.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a story recently where some millennials especially look at their phone and move it around even when they're not doing anything. So they'll look at a screen and just move stuff around and there's nothing there.
It's like a binky.
Yeah.
People do that in the elevators all the time. I mean, they do it everywhere.
I'm just trying to think
just
of
to
what
look
the
important.
Well, there's no more awkward talk in the elevators because people just immediately, when they feel awkward, they just go to their phone.
Yeah, but the other problem in this building, I notice it a lot, is you'll be trying to go through those turnstiles in the lobby, and people are looking down. They don't look.
They
have to get through.
They constantly run into that glass.
Well, they do.
Yeah.
People are
crazy.
Looking down constantly, no matter what. I was trying to think what the equivalent of this would be for other generations, like past generations. I don't know if there was one. I don't know.
Oh, there was. Like when Dave and I were in the Old West in the late 19th century, a lot of people would be waiting for a telegram instead of going through the security gate at the saloon.
Right. Yep. How about newspapers? Didn't people used to walk around looking at newspapers?
Yeah, but not as bad.
No, not like
not
this.
As bad.
Well, on the trains, they did.
Yeah, well, you look at it on trains, but there's a difference. Like a lot of people don't know this, but it's perfectly legal now to run someone down on a crosswalk if they're looking at their phone. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. That's not true.
That will convict you.
Steve, do you remember when they came up with the it was like a yonder for the stone tablets?
Oh, yes, that's right. I do remember that. Because
bigger.
We would chip into the stone tablets, run them from village to village. It'd be quite heavy. But people say, stop looking at your stone tablet. And they have to put them in a giant pouch. And I'm telling you, if those suckers swung in the wrong direction, no damn good.
Yeah, that pouch was made out of woolly mammoth fur, by the way.
That's exactly right.
It's true.
Dave and I invested heavily in the woolly mammoth farm.
Yeah, that didn't go so well.
Kid of the Week coming up. Stand by. More of the Steve Cochran Show.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
You know, there are pieces of material that come up when I do show preparation, show prep as we call it, they really have no place in the show. You kind of wedge them in wherever you can. Then that's scheduled and you got a couple of minutes to kill and you think, well, I could actually use this right now. Has anybody seen the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown special this year?
No.
It's on tonight.
Is it tonight?
It is tonight.
Well, it's perfect time.
Why is it new? Different?
No, but I love the Mental Floss website, and they actually were nice enough to help write the show this morning with fascinating facts about It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Let's see if any of these are actually fascinating together. The future of peanut specials depended on it. The creators had very high aspirations for Charlie Brown Christmas. When they screened it prior to its premiere, however, they felt it didn't live up to its potential, and CBS is going to cancel all future Charlie Brown peanut specials unless it's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown thing didn't perform. Got a huge number. Save Charlie Brown for the rest of us. Okay, you guys don't seem fascinated.
I love Charlie Brown.
I got a rock. That's my favorite line. The whole thing when he trick or treats and he goes, I got a rock.
Right, he had a rock. Yeah, because he was Charlie Brown. How about this? It was the first time Lucy snatched the football from Charlie Brown.
Was that right? Really?
First time ever, yeah. Yeah. You remember Cody Parkey played the kicker in that one?
I do.
Lucy's the bossy one, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a bossy one, a depressed one.
Yeah, Lucy's the one that sets up the counseling box.
The psychology booth for 5 cents.
Exactly. Yeah. And can.
Here's one you don't need to share with the kids. The music composer for the show, Vince Guaraldi, when he was putting together Great Pumpkin Waltz for the show, decided to take a break for the shower. When it came out, he thought he heard noises outside, went outside to investigate, naked, got locked outside, and the police had to show up. Who? The composer was found naked by the cops. By the way, good story about being locked out of your house. We'll take a break. Come back with your headlines next at 720 WGN. Now, how old are you?
I am 10 years old.
14.
8. 12.
I'm 18.
I'm 10 years old.
What grade are you in or about to go into?
I'm a senior.
8th grade.
Sophomore year.
Just finished junior year, so yes, I'm a senior.
I'm in 4th.
What do you do for fun?
I love art. Art is my favorite.
I do soccer, basketball, cheerleading, tennis, baseball.
I like to play on the trampoline, and I love to make slime.
I act in plays, and I sing all the time.
I also write stories because I love writing.
I play tennis. I also like to play soccer with my best buddy, but I'm not.
Listen, you're a great kid. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah, I'm still figuring it out.
Pediatric oncologist.
I really want to be a marine biologist.
I'm not really sure yet, but I'm looking into biomechanical engineering.
I want to be an orthodontist because you can help kids feel better out their smile.
Will you run for president someday?
I want to.
Are you excited to be on the show?
Yeah.
You sound super excited. Have you ever been more excited than this?
Yeah.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
All right, 6:39 now. And one note on Kid of the Week. I think Abigail Grace, my almost four-year-old granddaughter, could be Kid of the Week soon for kind of a unique talent, and that is making me do anything she wants, regardless of the danger it puts me in. Yesterday, when I was reading her a book before she was supposed to take her nap, her grandmother said, Abigail, Pops can read you a book. So I went in to read her a book. And then she wanted to read a second book. And you know me. I mean, I draw the line.
One book
limit. I said, okay. And then we read the second book. And she said, I'd like to read three more.
Ooh.
And that's when we were busted. That's when we got busted. We were on book five. And then Grandma came in and yelled at me, not her. So I'm just saying, if I do a hard time, Abigail Grace is the culprit here.
Worth it.
I would have kept that. You know, I would have been reading books till this morning if she kept asking.
Just say you have a book club, and you know, that's what you got to do.
And then she started reading books to me and correcting the words that I was reading wrong. You know how it goes.
Does she critique the books?
Yeah, she has her own. She brings over some other three-year-olds, and they all sit around and talk about what they got out of the books.
That'd be hilarious.
All right, joining us now in studio, Dean, how are you?
Doing good.
And Dean, how do I pronounce your last name?
Kousounalos.
Dean Kousounalos. Dean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you might be Greek.
Ah, that'd be correct.
That'd be correct. Yeah. And this is weird, G. You know, Vivian booked him.
She, and you're saying this because she is also a very proud Greek.
What? Actually, we've been talking to Dean in studio. We like him very much already. You're 16?
Yeah.
Go to what school?
Glenbrook North.
You have some amazing art talent. When did you know you could actually paint, draw, and things like that?
Well, I think it's 4, but I don't know, I can't really remember. My parents used to tell me that I used to draw on the ground for hours.
And you just knew you loved it?
Yeah, it was just a human thing for me.
What do you like to do, paint, draw, or both?
Now painting's like my secret love.
Okay.
But I like doing stuff with charcoal and drawing.
Yeah, I was going to say, watch me be a fancy art guy here. What medium are you working in?
Oh.
Charcoal. I used to work in ink, but now it's just charcoal and oil.
Where's the skill come from? Are you taught in some way, or is this all natural?
Well, I have two teachers. I have been going to an art school for, shout out to Once It Clicks, Ginny Hewn. She's my art teacher, and then I have an art teacher at Glenbrook North. Leanne Block.
Who do you like better of those two? No, I'm kidding.
That's a great question.
Yeah. All right. Now, you brought in several things. You know what, G, would you mind crank those lights up so we can hold these up on the stream? If you're watching them, stream at WGNradio.com. Actually, Viv's coming in to do that. We're going to ask you to turn towards which camera? Does it matter? Probably right up here. See where the clock is on the wall?
Yeah.
Just show them to me first and then hold them up to that. Let's see what you have first here, and then I'll describe them for you guys on the radio as well. And what we'll do is we'll take pictures of these, and we'll put them up at WGNradio.com and Twitter at Cochran Show and various other places. All right, so the first one is what?
So the first one's charcoal, and it is a still life of my boots and my jacket.
And Vivian, a fellow Greek, does not know how to hold it. Hold it up to that camera, Viv. That's literally the clothes you dropped on the ground.
Yeah.
So how does that inspiration? I mean, it's a very cool picture.
So I get inspired by a lot of, like, vintage things. And I've always worn boots.
Viv, come over here. Stand between, right here. Stand between these two. And then hold them up between these two. Right there. That's good. Yeah. That's good.
So,
and we'd be able to see them. I'm sorry. You were saying you always wear boots?
Yeah. So I've always worn boots. And I kind of get that from my brother.
Okay.
And I don't know. It's just a...
Does your brother have any art talent or does he just drop his clothes better?
He plays many instruments and he also performs with me. So
we got a very artistic family.
Yeah. Any other like creative interests? Just art for you? Or
I play violin.
Oh, see? Multi-talented. I knew it.
I'm in a dance troupe.
You dance, play violin, and you're an artist?
Mm.
And you got a great head of hair, too, which is annoying me, by the way. All right, show me another one. That's item number one. Do you sell any of this?
Yeah, I do. I do sell work.
Very nice. What are we looking at now?
So this is probably one of my first portrait oil paintings.
And who is the guy in the picture?
So it's just, that's like three different pictures that I merged into one. And it's like an old Cretan man from Greece.
Kind of
like wearing a cigarette.
And you say you also do outdoor painting as well.
Yeah.
So what kind of paintings do you do? Do you have subjects? Do you do outdoor?
So, yeah. I just started, but I kind of, that's like my new thing now. Like, I'll go outside with like a little, it's called a pocket box, and I'll just bring a bunch of oil paint and just paint like, you know, maybe I'll just find like a scene that I really like, and I'll just sit there and I'll just paint it.
Is it true that artists have phases? You're not just a portrait person your whole life. You're not just a landscape person your whole life.
Oh, my God.
Like you're inspired by something, and maybe a month from now it goes away, or maybe it lasts longer than that.
It's just like I started with, you know, I used to just sketch, and then I did, like, comic art, and then I did stuff with ink, and then I did charcoal, and then I did oil. I mean,
now, are you committed to starving? because here's my point. It's a very difficult way to make a living.
It's
incredible. And your talent is already amazing. I want to see one more, by the way. Rule of three. It's a very difficult way to make a living, as music is and dance is and other things. You must have very supportive parents, very supportive family.
I do. I definitely do. And I'm very grateful for that. This is, right now, I'm just selling stuff on the side. This was...
And we're holding up another one. By the way, Radio Art Review is a new thing I'm doing. but if you're watching again at WGNRadio.com,
you
can see
this. I love this one. It kind of is reminiscent of a tree, but it's modern. It's the hands are the tree trunk, and then instead of like the leaves, there's a face.
And a very and serene hands. Face. Yeah. Who is the face?
I don't know. I just kind of put that face there. I wanted to do a female just because it kind of rings better with the piece.
I mean, I think what's remarkable is that you're so young and your work has so much interesting depth. I mean, you have to have a lot of self knowledge and empathy and
sensitivity.
Yeah, maturity to be able to do this. And I would imagine this makes you really popular too.
Well, I can tell you, it's funny you said, I was just thinking of this. Okay, you're a good looking dude. Here's a guy who's 16.
Yeah, 16.
16 years old?
Yeah.
I'm guessing you get a fair amount of attention. Sensitive guy who happens to be an artist who also is a good looking dude. Yeah, yeah. And I could paint you a portrait. So be careful, my friend. Be careful.
Don't change. I mean, you're already selling the paintings and pictures and drawings, too.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool that you're already making some money off of your work, too.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta keep doing what I'm doing. And then,
what do you think you want to do? Any idea?
Well, I want to go into design and minor in like business.
Okay, but what does somebody who can do this with their hands do in a world that lets
it's
you do
a side
this
job.
With? No, but a world that lets you do it with a computer.
That's a great question, and I think it boils down to what's your niche, because it's like such a competitive world in terms of art that some people are really good at being on the computer, and people are really good at doing what they do by hand, but. The one thing that they have in common is like the creative mind.
Well, I would hope that the world continues to have respect for artists who are able to do it with their hands, because
it's not
a knock on computer artistry, because that's a skill as well. But it's a different skill. It's more mathematical and it's more, it's more rote, more systematic. You got to do it with your heart and your head.
Yeah. And there's a lot of challenge with that, too.
All right. Are you getting any inspiration in the studio? Like, do you want to maybe paint Dave?
Oh, for sure.
Under these really bright lights this early in the morning?
I'm thinking maybe for a project for art class.
Right?
Right?
Yeah. I'll just take a picture, bring it in. I'll be like, Miss Block.
Yeah, exactly.
We got a guy.
I mean, how many hours a day are you drawing or painting?
Well, probably comes down to like 2 hours at least.
That's a lot.
Along with the regular stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big deal. But you have to, right?
I mean,
it's what drives you.
I mean, sometimes it's like the dessert. I'll like stay up late.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I'm not comparing my art to yours, but I vividly remember being at your age, and certainly even now at the age of 109, getting up in the middle of the night because something funny occurred to me and I wanted to write it down.
Oh, that's what it is. It just kind of comes into your head and you just refine it and then you put it on paper.
Discipline and commitment.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Just you and your brother? You got a big family?
It's me, my brother, and then I have a middle brother, George, my mom and dad.
Hold on a second. A Greek named George.
I know, crazy.
Knock me over with a feather.
Well, my other brother's Giannis, so like that's even...
Right?
Yeah.
And your brothers support you as well?
Yeah, they support me through everything.
So you got a heck of a family, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's what makes you a great kid of the week. We're going to give you some stuff here, a big box of 64 Crayolas and some paper.
Oh, my God.
Have you maybe do me, you know, during the commercial break, come up with something. I mean, honestly, what could you do with this forehead, right? I mean, is that a canvas
or
what?
It's a lot to work with.
Just paint directly.
Nicely done, Dee.
Yeah, he's not lying. It's great to meet you. I'm really impressed.
You as well, man.
Yeah.
Thank you
so
for
can people see what you do? Is there a website for this?
Yeah, so...
you're on Instagram, you said, right?
You guys can follow me on Instagram.
What's your handle?
It's Dean_KOUS_art.
Okay, Dean_KOUS art.
Good thing you didn't leave the whole name on there.
No.
Yeah.
There should be like just a spell correct, like a some spell check situation on Instagram just for Greeks.
And no, there should. They really should.
Right? Yeah, with their 14 syllable names.
Instagram, no website or anything.
No, yeah, it's just Instagram.
Okay.
How many followers?
I don't know. I'd have to check.
A lot.
Yeah, there's so many. You can't even count them.
All right, last question. Have you ever painted yourself?
A really long time ago when I was like, I don't know, like probably like fifth grade.
I was told by a friend who's very artistic and very good at what you do and makes a little money off it that's the ultimate test for an artist. And it's revealing because however you paint yourself in that moment says something about how you feel.
Yeah, because, you know, to a certain extent, it's like you're like with when you paint things and you paint people, it's a lot of expression. So like you're not just painting what you see when you paint outside. You're painting how you feel about what you see.
Right.
So if you're painting yourself, there's definitely like a greater expression than if you're, you know, just painting some random thing.
You know, we could call this the narcissist period because of the times we live in.
Yeah.
But that would be interesting just to see if a series of time. You know, people take pictures at one point in their life every year at the same time in the same place.
See how they change, right?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. So let's meet back here in 50 years when you're 56 and I'm dead and then talk this over.
Yeah, so. Oh, for sure. Totally. I can't wait.
I like this guy. Thanks for coming in again. Thanks for being a great kid of the week and an inspiration. I hope the younger kids who are listening who want to chase this as well.
Yeah.
You want to suck up to any teachers who you're going to be late for school for here? You need a note?
Well, my U.S. history teacher, I sent him an email. I was like, I'm going to miss first period and the test that I have to take.
Your dad's just finding out about the test. All right, if there's any trouble, have him call me.
Oh, of course.
All right, good to meet you, pal.
Good to meet you as well.
It's 6:53. We're just taking some pictures here in studio with our art friend. I really like that kid. He's got like this chill vibe about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. He's very mature, and man, what a talent.
Crazy. You know, I once tried to draw that dog on the back of the comic book thing to get into the Minnesota School of Art.
Yeah. How'd that go for you?
They rejected me. They said, we don't think that's really for you. So,
but if you're in art class with him, don't you feel like it's kind of unfair?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, I don't want to, you know, be cheap about this, but that's a good-looking dude with an incredible artistic talent.
I was going to see how long it was going to be before you mentioned anything.
I'm just saying I didn't have his problems at 16.
No, you didn't. Or, yes, his assets, yeah.
When we continue, we'll get to the news top of the hour. And then Heather Chiron from the Daily Line on the teacher strike that we sort of had a thought that might end yesterday. Now, Steve, is there optimism today or is it too early to tell?
It's too early to tell, but the way we left things last night with everybody was that there was no optimism at all. As a matter of fact, the CTU president, Jesse Sharkey, was hoping that there'd be some agreement maybe by Thursday, that it would take just a couple of days to get it going. But after the mayor gave that letter yesterday, he said that hopes were dashed for a quick resolution. So we'll see today if they're digging in, but they'll be back on the picket lines. There are more talks scheduled, and maybe the tenor or the tone of things will change today.
There is a lot of national attention on this, not just because it's Chicago, but because this is the first major city strike that involves social issues like affordable housing and kids being able to eat and have a fair level playing field and things. That is generally thought to slow this process down, but a lot of people are watching how it proceeds to see if other unions might take up the same causes. So,
yeah,
we'll see how it develops from here. A couple of texters catching up on stuff from this hour on the show. Mary, you're talking about that. What's the thing called where you drop the phone in the pouch?
You begins with a Y. What was it? Yoder?
Yeah, the Yoda. Yonder.
Oh, the yonder.
Yonder. Okay. Texas says it's a neoprene pouch. If you need it, you step outside, and they release the magnet on the pouch. People have no willpower. It's too bad it has to be forced on people to realize we all need a break from it. So I'm trying to figure this out. If I own the Yonder, why do I have to have someone else release the magnet?
I mean, I think it's really more for, like, venues and artists and, teachers.
Yeah.
So do the schools for $12 give me a Yonder? Is that the deal?
No. I mean, I think they probably own it, and they own the system so that, you know, they hand out the pouches, you put stuff in, and then once you're in the zone, it magnetizes or does whatever to lock.
And Mary, just to pick up on the Charlie Brown situation, my five-year-old, this is another text, 847, my five-year-old wanted to know why everybody was so mean to Charlie Brown. When Charlie Brown got nothing but rocks, Charles Schultz's office in California got candy delivered for months. News time now.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
All right, so what side are you on? Do you have to pick a side? So, you know, I mean, it's not hard to go, well, look, again, there's no money, but the teachers make a lot of good points here. It's not easy, and I'll tell you who I feel for, parents, who have to figure it out again for another day today. There's nobody better than Heather Sharon at telling you what's going on in Chicago. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Steve.
Nice to have you back on the show.
I'm happy to be here, especially if I'm going to be introduced like that. Anytime.
Not bad, huh? Heather Sharon's the Daily Line's managing editor and City Hall reporter. All right, so we thought we had an end to this school strike yesterday. What happened?
Well, it seems like things started to take a turn when Mayor Lori Lightfoot sent union leaders a letter that basically said, we need to get kids back in class, and I'm asking you to go back to work without a deal while we continue negotiations. And that went over like the proverbial lead balloon.
The only leverage the union feels is to stay out?
Right. And that was a non-starter from the beginning. And then negotiations got stuck, as Vice President Stacey Davis-Gase said, over the issue of enforceable class size limits. And this is turned into sort of a key point of contention. The union wants guarantees written into the contract that classes won't be above a certain level for each grade level, like high school, you know, middle school, grammar school. And so far, the city has either been unable to meet those demands or unwilling.
So is this the only sticking point they're squabbling over right now, Heather?
No, there are a host of other issues. They still haven't settled on the length of the contract agreement. They haven't settled over pay. They haven't settled over specifics in terms of counselors and social workers and librarians. They made some progress on those issues over the weekend, but it sort of came to a screeching halt, it seemed to, yesterday.
City said, we're not going to give on money. We don't have any more money. We're broke. There is no more money. Does the union agree?
They do not. And this is sort of also one of those fundamental questions. Over the last 2 years, the school district has gotten somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 billion more from the state after it changed its school funding formula. And the union says, that's great. Let's put that money directly into the classroom in terms of more staffing and more resources. And the city says, yeah, that extra money is great, but it's basically the only reason that, you know, we're not teetering on the brink of bankruptcy anymore. And we have a significant amount of debt to pay back. And we all have, you know, we all know about the pension crisis. So that's where that money has to go. And we can't really use that money for, you know, what we would like to do. And that's the other sort of, you know, sort of strange notion about the strike, is that everybody agrees on the fundamental. Yes, there should be smaller class sizes. Yes, there should be more support workers. It's just a question of, how do you make those promises? How do you enforce those promises? And do each side trust each other to live up to that agreement?
Heather, another complaint that the union has been talking about is that the city saying it doesn't have any money and then finding money for subsidies for corporations. I know that the Lincoln Yards has also been something that they've been discussing. Can you flesh that out a little bit for our listeners?
Sure. So in April, just before Mayor Rahm Emanuel left office, the city council approved essentially $1.4 billion in subsidies for the Lincoln Yards development, which would basically turn what is now vacant, formerly industrial land along the north branch of the Chicago River into a brand spanking new neighborhood of shops and stores and condos and homes and parks and everything else. That money will be generated as the property value of that land rises. So essentially, the city is going to take that money and sort of give it back to the developers in Sterling Bay. A lot of people want the city to sort of get that extra tax revenue and keep that extra tax revenue for the city and for the schools. But as Mayor Lori Lightfoot pointed out, that money doesn't exist yet. It only will exist when that development starts, and that development hinges on those subsidies that the city has already agreed to. So I don't want to say it's phantom money, but it's sort of imaginary money at this point. And it's not sort of sitting in an account somewhere that Lori Lightfoot could write a check to the union over.
Well, and see, this is where I fall on the side of the city, because there are, a million different agendas that the Mayor Lightfoot and the city have to answer to and figure out how to spend the money. But, and this is why everything can be butted, but on the other side, there's the constant argument, which I think is fair. Why are we giving more money to Springfield? Why are we giving more money to the city when they clearly don't know how to spend it?
Yeah, it's a tough situation, and it's made significantly harder over the fact that I think the union feels like they have trusted the city in the past only to see the city not live up to those promises, and that they are pushing to put those promises in the contract so that if the city reneges, they can go to court and basically hold the city accountable for it. Otherwise, you know, they're left with holding press conferences and yelling at people like you and me, Steve.
Well, right, exactly. To piggyback on just what you said, Heather, ultimately, isn't that the issue? It's a trust issue between both sides. I mean, because philosophically, they do agree that these things should happen. It's just, is the union going to trust the mayor when she says she really just doesn't have the funds to do it?
That's right. And it's also sort of an existential fight over, how do you run a school district? Do you put promises of staffing and those sort of things in the budget, or do you put those in the contract? And the mayor has been very clear that while she's willing to sort of negotiate a little bit on these issues, that she's simply not willing to reduce what she calls operational flexibility to run the district in the way that she and Janice Jackson, the CEO, feel they have to, whereas the union says, you know, we don't think you're going to do what you've said you're going to do, so we want you to put it in writing, as the hashtag they've been using, and put it in the contract, which will make it harder for the city to sort of step back from those pledges.
You know, we talked about this last half hour. A lot of people around the country are watching to see if this social issues folded into a strike is successful, and will other unions take it on? There's literally thousands of people listening right now who have kids in Chicago schools that they have to figure out another day for, who are losing time in school, and they don't want kids to be homeless. They don't want kids to be hungry, but they also want their kids in school. Is it fair to fold this in, and is it slowing it down?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that it's slowing it down. You know, you and I haven't even mentioned the fact that the city is offering teachers a 16% raise. Right. So the issue is really not money. It's really sort of these other issues. And I think it's an open question as to whether it makes sense to try to shape the city's affordable housing policy, its homelessness policy, through a teacher's contract. However, the union will say, look, all of those issues directly impact our teachers' ability to teach in the classroom. If you've got a kid who's coming to school cold and hungry because they didn't have a nice place to sleep the night before, that's going to affect the entire class. That's going to affect the entire school. And the union's point is, look, the city has known about these problems. It's no secret that, you know, the city has an affordable housing crisis. And we are simply advocating for our students in the best way we know how. And this is how we have decided to do it. But it is certainly not a traditional strike where, you know, the widget makers want to, you know, 5 cent per hour raise or something along those lines, which makes it a little bit, I think, trickier to sort of navigate and is complicating a final deal.
So couldn't the city take a step here by saying we, and they have said this to a lesser publicized note, of course we agree kids shouldn't be homeless, and of course we agree we have a problem here. But a set-aside or a future considerations dollars figure to get this off the table to move on with the other things that are solvable? Because something big and you know, as fluid as this, I don't know how you solve this in a matter of days.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And the city has tried that to some extent. They had made an offer to basically earmark $400,000 that would be used to develop a pipeline of new support workers like librarians and counselors and social workers. That also went over like a lead balloon with the union, who says that the city, you know, basically isn't taking what they are demanding seriously, and that doesn't really address sort of the fundamentals of the issue. But, you know, I think that it is a huge task that the negotiators are facing today, and it appears that at least not at this point will the full bargaining team be at the table today in sort of a show of upset with what happened yesterday. And at the same time, Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren is headed to the West Side to rally outside in Austin Elementary School with striking CTU workers. So that will no doubt turn up the media attention just, you know, a couple of notches, I would think.
So the social worker part of this, you can, listen, my guidance counselor in high school got me through high school. It's one of the great people I've ever known in my life. And I salute guidance counselors and social workers. It's a thankless job, and it's an incredibly important job. However, the nursing part of this is more important to me, and I'm an idiot. I thought by law every school had to have a nurse. Not even close to true, huh?
Right. No, it's not. And there have been, you know, some really great work by my colleagues over at the Sun-Times documenting sort of the struggles that parents with kids with medical issues have suffered through. There was a story yesterday about, you know, a child who needed an insulin shot every day at school and was basically told, well, you or your husband is going to have to come to school every day and administer that because we don't have a nurse. And that, you know, is a significant problem for kids. And I can only imagine a huge source of stress for parents, which is why the union says that they're not willing to compromise, you know, on these issues to ensure that every school has a nurse and that every school has a social worker, and that the social workers and the nurses don't have huge caseloads of literally hundreds of kids. And, you know, they're not covering 5 schools in any given week.
We're out of time here, but journalists of the highest order, such as yourself, see what I did there again?
Yes, you did. The check's in the mail.
What is your instinct? Are we going to be here for a while?
I think so. I think I was relatively hopeful over the weekend that maybe we were going to get a deal today or yesterday. But the fact that, you know, things have sort of ground to a halt over this, you know, class size issue, I think is not great news. And let's not forget that Mayor Lori Lightfoot is about 24 hours before unveiling her 2020 budget. And she's going to tell us how she's going to cover a deficit somewhere in the neighborhood of $800 million.
Well, it's her fault. She wanted the job.
You think you've got a little bit of buyer's remorse?
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, talk about thankless. Heather Sharone is the Daily Line's managing editor and City Hall reporter. Tell people where we find you.
TheDailyLine.net. Sign up for our newsletter, and you will get all of this fantastic reporting right in your inbox every morning at 6:15.
Thank you, Heather.
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team, weekdays 4 to 10.
Texters coming in. We'll get to these as time allows, but Steve, you've been following the ongoing question and answer going on with Jesse Sharkey. What are they saying?
Yeah, this is their regular morning news conference involving the teachers union president. The union president says that after the mayor said yesterday that we have nowhere else to go, that it left busted the balloon of all of the negotiating team on the teachers' side. The teachers union president saying there's a difference between proposals being made and adequate proposals being made, suggesting that what is being put in writing by the school district is not does not address some of the core issues, and as an example of that, said that the school district has offered relief on class sizes for only about 15% of the problem classrooms that have been brought up. No mention of high school class sizes at all. So that gives you an indication of how far apart they are, at least on the issue of class sizes.
And that kind of reinforces what Heather Sharone said, that this is not going to end today or tomorrow, maybe the next day.
Doesn't feel like it. And the teachers union also says the mayor's been critical that there's such a large bargaining team, because I guess it's a 40-member bargaining team on behalf of the teachers, and some of those bargaining team members have been gone yesterday, and they'll be gone today, out with Elizabeth Warren, who's in town, as you heard earlier, with the teachers, but that there is a core negotiating team that will always be at the table, so that was a criticism that they felt was a little unfair.
And also feel bad for the kids that are in regionals and sports as seniors, and those things are not going to be able to go on, and that's the end of their sports career in high school, and you don't get those back either. All right, we're back with the headlines next. President made his life more difficult this morning. I know a lot of you are saying, well, how's that possible? Here's a tweet. So someday, if a Democrat becomes president and the Republicans win the House even by a tiny margin, they can impeach the president without due process or fairness of any legal rights. All Republicans must remember what they are witnessing here, a lynching. But we will win. That's not going to help him with African-American voters or moderates in either case. At 7:39, I want to say hi to my friend Mark Doyle. Mark is the proud proprietor, the innovator, the guy that started a little something called Rags of Honor in 1847. Now, when was it? When did you start this?
1864. Actually, it was a little bit later.
Let me give people a background here. Mark was a very successful forensic accountant. He said, how can I make my life more difficult? And he decided to go to Afghanistan. I'm not making this up. To go to Afghanistan. I remember the lunch you and I had. You said, dude, what would you think if I went to Afghanistan? I said, I think you should get to a doctor immediately and let's get you checked out. You went to Afghanistan. You lived in like a storage unit.
I did. Shipping container, yeah.
Of course, my favorite part of the story is when you arrived at the airport in Afghanistan, still in the middle of full combat at that point, and your driver didn't show up.
No driver, right. Five white guys at the...
All look like you totally belong.
Totally belong.
This is in Kabul?
In Kabul, yeah.
Yeah. Kabul? Kabul.
Kabul.
Kabul? Okay.
Yeah.
So you arrive in Kabul, you don't have a ride. It's hard to get an Uber.
Impossible to get an Uber. And the only reason we found the base 5 hours later is because I heard a guy walking by me who was a private security contractor with an Australian accent. I said, dude, we missed our ride. How do we get out of here? So he called his driver, who was an Egyptian, spoke no English.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him the equivalent of about $1,000.
Right.
And
worth every penny, by the way.
And he just kept driving around town for hours and hours. And finally, by accident, we ran into a gate. I saw a U.S. soldier, and I said, I'm looking for the new Kabul compound. He said, well, you're right in front of it.
This is it.
Yeah, by accident.
So you go, you survive that.
Yeah.
You go and you stay in the storage unit. Your perspective on the American war effort, I know, changed after that. You always support the soldiers. You always support the idea of what we do abroad. However, and this is what, 2013?
2010.
12? 10.
Yeah.
So in 2010, you came back with a different feel for this, and that different feel, you were very eloquent in a piece you wrote for the Chicago Tribune, laying out the fact that Afghanistan is a war that goes nowhere because they don't have a central taxation situation.
To my knowledge, I'm the only one who's looked at it like that, but I saw it in real time. When you have a civil society that cannot collect and dispense revenue, there's no prospect to build a formidable, informed civil society.
Can't pay for schools, fire, police, anything.
When 85% of your GDP is donor GDP,
mm-hmm.
like it's $98 billion to date there, just in Afghanistan
right.
for the U.S.
Right.
There's no ability, there's no ADOT, like Afghan Department of Transportation, so you can't repair the power grids. When we built schools, when we left, 500 schools were destroyed. Right, so there's no ability to have a sustained
economy. And there are literally roads that go nowhere, factories that aren't plugged in, all of that.
When we got there, one of the things that they decided to do with the previous administration, and it carried over, it made some sense in the aggregate, is to give intrastate commerce. What we needed to do is make sure that we paved all the roads, right, so that people in Badakhshan could drive down to Mazar-e Sharif and there could be some commerce. One of the byproducts of that was it used to take about 4 or 5 days to drive from Afghanistan either through Torkemskate over to Pakistan or way up through the north up into the other stands. And all the poppy in the world comes from Afghanistan.
Right.
80% of the poppy in the world comes from
right.
Afghanistan. So they would bring cement in from Pakistan because there are no cement factories. They would empty the cement trucks, fill them with heroin. Used to take 4 or 5 days. We cured that. Now you can get out in like 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So we increased the ability for them to transport drugs throughout across the region.
Right.
And every time we pulled out, all you saw was an increase in the amount of crime, a decrease in the amount of crime that got reported because there's just so much corruption. So I always thought we did it upside down, that we were forcing $1 billion a month through the pipeline in a place where people prior to that made like $5 a day.
Sure.
And until we had a rule of law, you weren't going to have a sustained civil society. So the money should have been spent creating a rule of law, magistrates, educating at the local level, and then bring commerce in. But
There's a great scene at the end of Charlie Wilson's War that you and I have talked about before. And it's if you leave the movie earlier, you're not paying attention, you miss the entire point of the film. Where Tom Hanks and the role of Tom Hanks. Was it Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Tom Hanks. And the role of Charlie Wilson has managed to end the Soviet Union such that it was, and then goes back and asks for money for schools. And it was schools?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's over. We already got it. And because there were no schools built at the end of, quote, Charlie Wilson's war, that allowed Al-Qaeda to propagate. The Taliban had their way. Eventually, we get 9/11. We're where we are today. So based on what you know and what you've described, this war never ends.
It's never going to end. And one of the distinctions here was that we weren't at war with the Afghans. We were invited by the Afghans. Remember, Karzai was our guy. And so we were invited. This is wholly different than the Russians and from the Brits.
Mm-hmm.
The consequence is the same, though. When you have a country where about 10% use the banks, maybe 15% are literate, and you try and bring a westernized democracy into a country that's not ready for it, I would argue that you're not going to get there. You're certainly not going to get there anytime soon. If you go Badakhshan, again, that's way up, like close to China.
Okay.
Their calendar is the year 1200. They're still on a calendar 1200.
Even if you open a new account at the bank, it's still 1200?
A new account at the bank.
Right.
Good news is rates are a lot cheaper.
I bet, yeah.
And no electricity. Wait, there are parts of the country that still don't have electricity.
And it's not like they miss it. They've never had it.
Never had it, and no reason to have it now.
So when you have a tribal society like that in a mountainous area of the world, like almost no other, where people survive, live, and thrive on poppy and the ability to sell poppy, the idea that a westernized culture would come in and decide, we're going to burn your poppy fields, we're going to do this, we're going to pave your roads, we're going to do that, that's not exactly something they'd welcome, right? When they've got to me, it's like the gang mentality. It's like a kid joins a gang because he needs a family. These tribes are a part of the Taliban because we know who they are. They're local. They're telling us what we need to hear.
They also play by a different set of rules. In Afghanistan, there is a thing called a night letter, that if you were in a local town that was working with the U.S. Army, for instance, to build a road or a bridge, and one of the counterinsurgency operation was essentially reinvented in Iraq, where they would come in and say, we're going to give you a job to rebuild your city, mm-hmm. put down the gun, take off the uniform, go to work, support your family. They tried to implement it in Afghanistan. In some places, it worked well. But in other places, these guys who were Taliban 2 weeks ago were now working during the day to build a bridge, for instance.
Right.
But at night, they would get what's called a night letter. Tell us where the U.S. is going to be, or we're going to kill your family. And they mean it. And it happened right before I left. A group of seven Army, four infantry, five infantry guys, and I think a sergeant. We're bringing the money back to the local mullah to finish the job. It's like $70,000.
They were taken out.
And as they drive in, detonated, killed, right? Because somebody had gotten a night letter to say, where are they going to be? And they put a pressure-plated IED. So you can ride your bike over it, but when it gets to be heavy as a convoy, boom. And so they play by a different set of rules. And there's no way that's going to change, because we don't go summarily in and just say, tell us where the Taliban are in your village, or we're going to kill you.
Yeah, we don't know their rules, except their rules are played by their rules. They don't play by ours. So it's tough to sit down at alleged peace talks and agree. And that's why this is a war we have no business being a part of. But that's also why you don't invite the Taliban to Camp David.
There really are no words to underscore the ridiculous nature of that offer, that you would offer to bring the Taliban to Camp David. Also have to remember that there's no incentive, even in Iraq, when Biden was still a chairman of foreign relations, he wanted to just create three regions in Iraq, right? The Shias, the Shiites, the Kurds, and the Sunnis, mm-hmm. that share the oil revenue, mm-hmm. right? Strong central government, loosely federated. There's no ability to do that in Afghanistan because they don't have any inherent wealth. So there's no incentive for anybody other than to have power, which they're trying to do with the Taliban now. But the U.S. is being so prescriptive in keeping the Afghan government out of it. Now, the Afghan people are saying, you're siding with the Taliban. So there, it's just no easy way to get this thing negotiated.
It is a hot, hot mess, and it doesn't get cleared up in a day or in a meeting or anything else. Now, having said that, set that as a background, that partly is why you led to Rags of Honor. When we come back, tell me a little bit more about Rags of Honor and what you're going to do to raise money next.
Roger that.
Mark Doyle, he's broke, so you don't have to be, so he can help others. All right, so Rags of Honor is what? Nope, you need a mic. Rags of Honor is what?
Rags of Honor is an apparel company that I started when I came back from the aforementioned trip to Afghanistan. We hire homeless and at-risk veterans. We're a custom shop. We do a lot of work for people all around town. We do a line for the Chicago Blackhawks, who we love. And we have an e-commerce store. You can come and buy hoodies, ball caps, knit caps, t-shirts.
And it's high-quality stuff, kids.
All made in America.
I've spent my money there. Ragsofhonor.org. It really is good stuff and cool logos and all that. And as you said, a custom shop. So if companies want to get involved with logoed stuff, you can pull that off as
Absolutely.
Well. And these homeless vets then are given an opportunity to get back on their feet. How many are working for you now?
We have a full-time between all three ventures, probably about 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. We've hired 85 along the way over the last 5 years.
And the other two ventures are beer?
R&R Brews, which my beautiful wife Kip started, and Veteran Roasters.
Cup of Joe,
our coffee company, which she also started with Brandon Marty.
And if you go to ragsofhonor.org, it's all linked through there.
It's all linked through there, yep.
Okay. What's Jump for Vets?
Jump for Vets is an event I started last year as a way to call attention to a veteran suicide epidemic, which still exists. Most of your listeners know this because you all here are so good about staying focused on veteran issues. But every day to this day, 22 veterans take their own life. Every day.
It's outrageous.
So listeners, by tomorrow at this point, at this time tomorrow morning, 22 will have taken their own day. So I said, let's do an event that is fun. It pushes us a little bit beyond our limits, and let's raise money for a specific procedure that we fund called a stellate ganglion block, which is an outpatient procedure which quite literally cures PTS. And so the Jump for Vets is an event where we come out.
They'll pay for that.
And we pay for it.
That's what I mean.
That's
pay
right.
for that.
So all
procedure.
The money that raised. So you jump 2,200 jumps in about an hour. That's 100 jumps for every veteran suicide. And to the people listening who say, God, that's pretty hard to do. You know what's hard to do? is be homeless. You know what's hard to do is to be shell-shocked and to have been in 10 firefights and come home and not know if you're going to live another day. So I would say anybody out here thinks they can't do it, they'll be surprised. You can do it.
And by the way, I don't care if you can't do it. If you can't do it, that's not the point. The point is come by and support the cause and do whatever you can.
Jump in place. You don't have to jump the rope, right?
Yeah, exactly. And is your friend Catalin hosting?
Catalin from POW Gym Chicago is going to host it and run it. She is one of the premier trainers, boxers, mixed martial artists in Chicago, as you all know.
She could kill me with her bare hands.
She literally could.
Yeah, I asked her not to. This is Sunday, November 10th, and it's a quick event. Starts at what time?
Starts at 9. Doors open around 8:30. I think we go from 9 to 10. The Blackhawks, as always, are our host.
I got 9 to 10:30 here, so let's stretch them out.
Maybe I should read my own flyer one of these days, right? Shocking that I'm not a millionaire, isn't it? It's shocking.
Shocking that you're hiding it. 9 a.m. to 10:30, Sunday, November 10th. This is the Atrium at the United Center.
Yep.
Impossible not to find.
Impossible not to find. We're going to have a DJ spinning live tunes. We have coffee and donuts provided by the Levy Company out there, and water for everybody, and a jump rope for everybody, and a T-shirt for everybody.
And all you got to do is raise $22.
That's the minimum is $22. Yeah. Raise as much as you want.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm saying the minimum is $22.
Yep. Go to ragsofhonor.org.
You supply jump ropes?
We do.
Okay.
But you don't have to use the rope.
You do not have. That's a great point. You do not have to use the rope.
Jump up and down.
Jump in place.
Jump around.
I can't jump.
Jump around.
Yeah, just jump around.
Right.
3 minutes. So we jump for 3 minutes. We take a break. Get some water. Stretch out. Jump for another 3 minutes. So it's not as hard as it seems.
Have you taken to heart my idea for the middle-aged man challenge, where you have a nice, comfortable chair? You get out of the chair. You go to a fake refrigerator. You get a snack out. You go back to the chair. You find the remote, and you doze off. Because I think there's some money to be raised.
You just described my workout, so thank you for that. Yeah, and I can make it to that fake refrigerator and back now in like under 8 seconds.
Well, your timing's strong.
Yeah, I'm good.
For more information, ragsofhonor.org.
Yes, sir. Ragsofhonor.
Everything's right there.
Everything's right there.
Plan on it. Sunday, November 10th. That's Veterans Day weekend. Jump for Vets at the United Center Atrium. And we are back with the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than one night.
We got live to Channel 9, where world traveler Dean Richards is standing by. Good morning, Dean.
Back in Chicago. Back home where I belong.
How was New York?
It's lovely. Autumn in New York is beautiful.
It is, and you get less of the summer smells.
Very true. The cooler weather means that the garbage is not humming as much as it normally does.
And remember, the fall, if you time it right in New York, you can be there when the hot dog carts change their water. They do it twice a year, once in the spring once in the fall.
Whether they need to or not.
Right?
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
The rats are carrying multicolored pizza slices, packs of cigarettes.
Anybody ever thought about an off-Broadway rat musical? Where the rats would be taught to sing and dance.
That would be genius.
Right.
Someone would do that. You are a thinker.
My first day.
You're an idea machine.
Facts of Life, HBO, Star Wars, Days of Our Lives, all coming up. But who'd you talk to in New York?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
What's his real name? Bob Smith.
What was Mitt Romney's Twitter name?
Oh, yeah, Pierre.
Pierre Defecto or something.
Pierre Delecto.
Delecto, yeah, right. Benedict Cumberbatch, who is a very, very nice person. Had a chat with him.
And, too thin, needs a sandwich.
I didn't get that impression.
Oh, you didn't think so? Okay.
Yeah, didn't get that.
Well, you were in a room with him, I wasn't.
Yeah, I can't. It's pretty hard for me to call anybody too thin.
I like how I turn into a Jewish grandmother for Benedict Cumberbatch. Hey, eat something.
Here, have a kugel.
I don't know him, not met him. I'm taking your word for it, as I do on all things. You like him.
Very, very nice man. And also Michael Shannon, Chicago's very own, who is an ensemble member at the Red Orchid Theater in Old Town, who's always, like John Malkovich, I'm a little afraid to look him right in the eye.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's a scary dude.
I'm afraid he's going to steal my soul if I look directly into his eyes.
Well, I saw him kill a man with his bare hands. I witnessed it.
Yeah, not a bit surprised at that. But they play, Shannon plays George Westinghouse, and Cumberbatch plays Thomas Edison. At the early days of electricity, when electricity was first invented,
were they really friends or colleagues? Or
they were, I guess you might say, enemies,
rivals.
This is a true story. Rivals. Westinghouse wanted his system of electricity to be used to distribute electricity around the country, the alternating current. Steve,
he was the AC man,
and. Thomas Edison wanted his method, the direct current method, to distribute electricity around America. And this movie is about that rivalry.
AC versus DC.
Right, right.
It's just, again, I have no idea how they got this thing funded, but it turns out to be a good film.
It's actually a very interesting film. It was originally going to be released in 2017. The film was too long. I mean, they realized that they needed to still do some work on this. So the director went back. He cut about a half an hour out of the film. So this movie is now called The Current War, the director's cut, because it's a new version of the whole thing. And it's actually very, very interesting. And
well, the same people that bought this movie, I am pitching them, and you and I are involved in this, on a movie about the history of shoe eyelets. You know, I mean, because it wasn't always a time where you could just thread your shoelaces so easily.
That's right. There was a big war between Jimmy Eyelet was his name.
Right, right, right. And the people that wanted to stop him, the slip-on people.
Right. Well, there was Johnny Slip-On. But
right,
also Ulysses S. Velcro.
He was the worst.
He was the worst. You know, so that it also has some potential. This movie is interesting. You know, there was a guy named, this is all true story also, Nikola Tesla was involved in this
rivalry. In that same era.
He was first worked for Edison,
okay,
and then tried to go out on his own, and then worked for Westinghouse.
And he invented electric horse buggies.
Before he invented the electric car.
All right, so when we come back, I want to hear a little bit of you talking to the Cumberbatch. And by the way, that's how he likes to be referred to, the Cumberbatch.
Right.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard.
The music of John DeCoste. John will be with us, I don't know, some point this way. Tomorrow? John will be in tomorrow. Contributing.
Thanks for the warning.
All right, so we're talking about Benedict Cumberbatch playing Thomas Edison.
Yes.
And when is this movie out?
It's going to come out on Friday. Cumberbatch has played, well, Sherlock Holmes, of course. He's played Julian Assange. He played, what was that movie, The Imitation Game, in which he played the real-life guy who...
Oh, the code breaker.
Cracked the, the Nazi code. Alan Turing?
That's it.
Was that his name?
Very impressive.
Turing.
Turing. Yeah, Turing. Turing. Very impressive.
So he, you know, he's played real-life people before, and I wondered, you know, if there was a difference or special challenge to that. This isn't the first time that you've played real life people. Is there a difference when you play somebody who actually existed versus somebody who is fictitious?
And no as well, I guess. You know, Edison's pretty iconic. So there's that thing of what can we bring to the story that's behind closed doors or to do with the person that was private rather than the public presentation of him and what we know about him from Wikipedia and deeper. And there's often a responsibility, especially if that person is alive, to somehow be protective of the legacy, but also investigate it and not be shy of ugly truths as well as the things worth celebrating that character. But then again, with a fictional icon, you've got a huge fan base often that are far more equipped to tell you how to do the job than are.
I think, you know, being part of the Marvel universe, he, you know, probably has fans coming up to him all the time. Now, you know, that button does not go there.
Sure.
And he would never wipe his nose with his left hand. He would use his right hand.
And why is the proper British accent so fascinating? Because if he had said word for word that answer in this voice, well, yeah, sure, it's harder than hell to play the other way. It would not nearly have been as appealing.
Captivating about all of that.
So, All right, Days of Our Lives story.
Yeah, this story just broke a few minutes ago. Actor John Clark, who was a longtime actor on Days of Our Lives, he played Mickey Horton on the show, passed away. He started on Days of Our Lives in 1965.
Wow.
And stayed on the show until 2004, where his health took a turn for the worse. But this morning, died from complications of pneumonia, 88 years old.
Pretty good run. Tickets for the final Star Wars out?
Yeah, this was a big deal. If you were watching Monday Night Football last night, you saw the final trailer for the final Star Wars movie, the Star Wars saga, the original saga. So this will be the ninth of nine movies of that saga.
All right, now I forgot where we are because there's like 47 filler movies in between. Is this the one where the last scene of the movie that's supposedly previous to this is Luke standing on a cliff? And at the end of the movie...
Right, and Iron Man dies.
And Iron Man smashes into the cliff.
Spoiler alert.
But is that the one with Luke?
Yeah. Yes.
It's hard to know.
Because there was that scene reveal at the end where you go, who's right. the guy in the hood? And takes the hood down, and it's old Luke.
Mm-hmm. It's old Luke.
And he's in a seaside hut, right. and he's on a cliff.
Right, he's at a B&B in Saugatuck. Who would have known he was into beating?
Who knew an Airbnb would last that long into the future? All right, so that is the movie that precedes so this movie.
This now picks it up with, you know, the new cast, Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac are the primary characters now. But
wait, is John Boyega the same one from the Waltons?
John Boyega is the same one from the Waltons. Yes, he is.
Remember at the end they go, "Good night, John Boyega." Remember that? I remember that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't have to. You're not old enough.
Either do I. I'm too young. Yeah, so, but we're also going to get some Billy Dee Williams in this one.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get, there is footage that was already shot of Carrie Fisher, obviously prior to her Aww. Passing away, that will be incorporated into this as well. The new trailer is, we've got it up at WGNTV.com/Dean's List if you want to take a look at the whole thing. I actually teared up. I'm not kidding. I am... I didn't think I was as big of a Star Wars nerd as I apparently am, that I had goosebumps watching it, and at the end, I'm sitting here tearing up like a big baby.
Hmm.
Wow, in the trailer, even.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very emotional. But
what makes you more teary, stories about clowns or this?
Clowns.
Okay.
But tickets went on sale. The movie's not going to open until December 20th. But tickets went on sale last night through all the online places where you can buy movie tickets. So if you're interested, 59 days, every single day I'll have a new story about Star Wars and beat this into the ground before the movie opens up.
We'd expect nothing less. Dina's story is a story on the HBO Finding Neverland lawsuit as well on TV this morning. But if I said to you, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have, what would you say?
The facts of life.
The facts of life.
The facts of life.
They're doing a reunion show?
The facts of life. They are doing a reunion movie, a TV movie on Lifetime. It's not going to be them as their former characters, Blair, Tootie, Natalie, and Joe.
Which, by the way, is the names of everybody on this show. The rest of our names are show business names. But my real name is Tootie.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that about Steve. Tootie Cochran. Mm-hmm.
Tootie Fruity.
Right, Tootie Fruity Cochran. That's me. That's me.
He was named Tootie Fruity, Tootie by some of his coworkers back in the day because of his flatulence problem.
That's true. That was at the Loop.
That he had.
Bonaducci. Bonaducci named me that at the Loop.
The Fruity.
They're all going to get together. Lisa Welchel, Kim Fields, Mindy Cohn, Nancy McKeon. They're all going to play different characters in what is, I'm told, is a true story about a woman who teaches her town the importance of the holidays. But they'll all be together. And there's supposed to be some little tip of the hat to actress Charlotte Ray, who played Mrs. Garrett on the show, who passed away.
Yeah.
They're going to have like a little special salute to her. Woven into the script. It's going to be on Lifetime December 1st.
Will they have the maid Alice back or not so much? How about Tiger the dog?
I think you might be thinking about a different show.
I got to pay
You know
attention.
What everybody's asking?
No.
Because George Clooney did two seasons.
Yeah, will he be in?
On Facts of Life. Will he be on the show is the big question. Nobody knows that, Steve.
Well, get back to me when Nobody you're not doing a Star that. Wars story.
Nobody knows that, Tootie.
Exactly. Call me Tootie. Thank you, buddy.
Yep.
We're coming back with your headlines next. Ole Mata, the Breakfast of the Blackhawk, just after 9 o'clock, Big O2. And Rich McHugh, former NBC producer, worked with Ronan Farrow on the Spike story of the Me Too movement, all coming up. Time now for the headline. Good morning, Adam Hogue.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I am good. How about you guys?
We're doing fine. Dave, say hi to Adam Hogue.
Hi, Adam Hogue.
Gee, say hi to Adam Hogue.
Hi, Adam Hogue.
All right, now that we got the pleasantries out of the way. The Chicago Bears looked awful. Are they curable?
Ooh, I think their offense might not be.
Oof.
At least not this season.
Ooh.
There's very little evidence to suggest that their offense is going to turn this around. Now, can they do enough to stay afloat and ride that defense and maybe contend? Maybe. But this road to the playoffs in the NFC, even if all that happens, is very, very tough. I mean, if you're not going to win your division, this might be a year where you have to have 11 wins to get into the playoffs as a wild card team. And the road to 11 wins right now with the schedule the Bears have, that means they can only lose two more times.
Yeah, 8 out of the last 10. Those are strong words from Adam Hogue.
Well,
Dave,
you know what? It's kind of like standing outside the waiting room and the doctor comes out and lays it on the line,
don't
gives you the bad news.
Don't think the Bears are going to make it.
But if you, because I was looking at the standings yesterday, and it's true, you're only 6 games into this, but, well, I mean, at this point, Green Bay's 6-1. I know they got to go on the road for a bunch now, and you do have another game with them, and Minnesota's at 5-2. But you look around the other divisions, I mean, Philadelphia looked bad the other night against Dallas, but I think most people have kind of figured there'd be a wild card team out of the East, and the NFC West looks brutal with San Francisco and Seattle and the Rams duking it out. I mean, the numbers don't bode well for the Bears in terms of, but I almost think, Adam, you're not at that point yet. I mean, you have to, right now, you can't even talk about finding a path to the postseason because you got to figure out a way to beat the Chargers on Sunday and then go out on the road and go from there.
Well, and more importantly, inside your own building, you have some cracks in the foundation right now that are starting to develop, and a head coach that I think is desperately trying to put it all back together and make sure that those cracks don't turn into, you know, the season really getting away from them, because he brought it up himself after the game on Sunday that when you start to have a situation like this where one side of the football is playing well and the other just can't move the ball at all, you know, you start to get some finger pointing going on, and that's only that's human nature, and we talked about that after the Raiders game a few weeks ago as well. So I was very, very disappointed in how they came out, considering these are the same conversations we had after they lost to the Raiders. And I thought after a bye, we would learn a lot about this team and a lot about Matt Nagy and how he could rally the troops. And for them to come out against the Saints and look that unbelievably flat from the very start and that incompetent on offense, it's very, very concerning. And big picture-wise, I don't know if we're at the point where we're doubting Matt Nagy, the head coach. I'm sure some fans are doing that right now. But I certainly have questions about Matt Nagy, the offensive mind, and even more questions about where this quarterback is headed, because that right now seems to be the biggest problem.
What happened to all the fun from last year, like the Willy Wonka stuff?
That's over.
Yeah.
So no more fun.
I mean, there was a little bit of kind of daring in the offense.
I'm glad you brought that up, Dave, because I think I'm actually going to write about that this week. The guy they called Swaggy Nagy, where's the swagger?
Yep.
And I'm talking about both in his play calling and just around the team. You know, like it has disappeared, and that happens when you're losing, but there's no swagger in the way he's calling plays, the way this offense is moving. And I think, though, that goes back to the quarterback. I'm really worried that the Green Bay Packers broke Mitch Trubisky in week one. I go back to that game, and you had 8 months leading up to it, all the hype, and a quarterback, a young quarterback that really, I think, believed he was going to take the next step.
Do you think he has post-traumatic Packers disorder?
Something like that.
Is he still under warranty, though?
So he has PTPD.
I saw a guy that walked up to the podium after that game and just looked crushed. That looked like he had the confidence just vacuumed right out of him. And he's not having fun right now. You talk about the swagger with Matt Nagy. What happened to the guy that was walking up to the podium in Mike Ditka clothes last year and after at Halloween and the Christmas sweater after they won the division against the Packers? And it's easy to do that stuff when you're winning, but I just don't see a guy with confidence right now, and I think it's affecting him on the football field.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, this is true of talent, period. If you're in show business, and everybody is that's currently in this conversation, you have to have people on the air, on the field, on stage, on TV, who feel good about themselves and feel like they're getting it done. If he's questioning himself, they got to work between the ears before they can fix anything on the field.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's where it's at right now. But other things Matt Nagy can do.
Trade for another quarterback?
Well, there's a lot of complications there. I can give you a name if you really want me to.
Cam Newton?
No, the only one I would consider right now, and I it's probably not even possible, but it would be Marcus Mariota, who's been benched in Tennessee, who Ryan Pace liked coming out of Oregon.
And interesting.
Whose head coach at Oregon was Mark Helfrich, currently the Bears offensive coordinator. The problem there...
What if we get him like free shed tickets or something? We'll throw that in.
Yeah, throw that in the deal. But he's still owed $20 million as a cap hit this year, and the Bears only have $18 million in cap space.
That's a lot.
So the math doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Adam, has there been any talk, and I like David Montgomery, and I think he's going to be a heck of a player, but obviously if they ran the ball seven times on Sunday, has there been any whisper that somehow not having Jordan Howard has affected the running game?
Well, I think it has a little bit. I don't think there's been a whisper with the Bears, but as I look at things, I do think in some ways they missed the guy that you could just hand the ball off to, kind of like a bowling ball, and he would just run forward and pick up three yards when there wasn't much there. That being said, I mean, these issues run so deep that I don't think Jordan Howard. They're missing Jordan Howard more as a pass protector. As a blitz pick, guy picking up blitzes, than they are anything else. But, like, that run to Anthony Miller the other day, the sweep where he fumbled the ball, you know, last year they ran that play against the Bills, and Jordan Howard was blocking, not David Montgomery. But Trey Burton also made his block in that game last year. Nobody blocked the guy on the outside this time around. So there's just one-man breakdowns, it seems like, on every single run
dude,
play.
Missed assignments is coaching. So who's failing outside of Matt Nagy?
Well, and I agree. I think when it gets to this point where there's this many breakdowns, and it's across different – you say who's to blame other than Matt Nagy from a coaching standpoint. I see issues with the running backs blocking. I see issues with the tight ends blocking. And I see issues with the offensive line blocking. So it's all of those position coaches right there. And they all, I mean, collectively as an offensive staff, need to shoulder some of this blame.
No kidding.
It's not just the players.
All right, so we can read all of your knowledge where, Adam Hoag?
WGNradio.com/Bears.
And when will Adam Hoag be on the road next? For Adam Hoag on Ice, Adam Hoag's one-man show in the theater, when will that happen?
We got a double show in a couple weeks, right, Dave? We're in Bloomington, Indiana, and then the tour moves to Philadelphia the next day.
Yeah, how about that? And it's a night game in Bloomington. I'm sure you've heard that.
Have not, but thanks for
you had not heard that? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to brighten your morning.
Two words, charter.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
Is that in the budget? Is that in the budget, guys?
I meant a bus.
Yeah, I think his line is breaking up now.
Yeah, a little bit. Anyway, I love what Adam Hoag does for us and on the NFL. He's one of the best in the business, period.
Yep.
And I highly recommend you football fans, and those of you who aren't even football fans, read up on him, follow him. And you'll get you'll be a better person. You'll be a more well-rounded individual if you follow Adam.
I keep telling G that.
Oh, I do. I read that entire article, the really long one.
The really long one.
Thank you, Adam Hoag.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
See you later. That was Adam Hoag. It's 8:47, and I got a bunch of texts to catch up on. All you guys have a lot to say about the school strike. And teacher strike, I should say. And we'll get to that coming up. Oh, and you know what else I have? Who wants to go to the Meekum Auto Auction? Raise your hand.
Me.
A pair of tickets to the Meekum Chicago 2019 Auto Auction taking place this weekend. That's Thursday through Saturday at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center. World's largest collector car auction company. 1,000 American muscle cars, classics. Excuse me, I hiccuped right in the middle of that. Vets, trucks, hot rods, and more to be consigned for sale. Let me see if I can time this out so I don't hiccup again during the break.
Do I say bless you or something?
You're supposed to scare me. Visit Meekum.com for details. Should we wait for another one? No, that was not.
Was there a taste involved with that?
No, just a hiccup. Seventh caller, 312-981-7200 is the number if you want those Meekum Auto Auction tickets. And you can go right there. We caught one there right now. Back with the hiccups and more in a moment on 720 WGN. Mary?
Up on Eden's, up to 34 minutes to Lake Hook Road. Inbound 20, the Kennedy is down to about 50 in both directions between O'Hare and downtown. Inbound Eisenhower is about an hour from 390 for Mannheim, 34 minutes. Outbound worse, 42 heading out to Mannheim. Stevens and inbound 46 from the Tri-State, hour 5 from 355. The Ryan 20 from 95th. Very slow Lakeshore Drive from Lawrence to Belmont. Accident 355 northbound at 22nd in the left lane. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Mary Vandeveld from the IDOT Traffic Center reminding you to drive responsibly. It really is a matter of life or death.
Neiman Marcus has released their holiday fantasy gift guide for 2019.
We'll tell you all the fun things that you can't afford at 11:05.
It's us, Bill and Wendy, this morning at 10.
Like drinking and driving, getting behind the wheel after the use of marijuana is dangerous. Driving under the influence of marijuana puts the driver, passengers, and others on the road at risk. The drug driver has impaired judgment, alertness, and concentration. Marijuana can slow your reaction time and the ability to make decisions, disrupt your focus, and impair depth perception. All skills required to drive safely. For more information on drug driving, visit communityallianceforprevention.org.
This is happening. I'm sitting at my standing desk, not necessarily looking at celebrity gossip, when Kevin bursts in.
The new homepage module is supposed to go live this month, Deirdre, and the dev team's backed up for weeks.
Kevin's solution is to sweat through his shirt. I hop on Upwork and hire a web dev agency with a flawless success rating. Because the new module will be getting done. And thanks to Upwork, this is happening.
Oh, you got this under control.
Oh, Kevin. As a matter of fact, I do.
Upwork. Hire freelancers. Make things happen.
Grandview buys homes. Hi, I'm Tom Detlich. Grandview has been helping families who want to sell their home for over a decade now. Grandview is different than using a real estate agent to sell your home. We buy the home directly from you in as little as 10 days. I can share countless stories of families who had a difficult-to-sell home and who were so stressed they didn't even know where to begin. With Grandview, the process is simple and stress-free. Contact us for a brief and private appointment at your home, then get your fair cash offer in as little as 24 hours. It's that simple. As the largest direct home buyer in Chicagoland, you can trust us to treat your situation with dignity and respect. Our highly trained team knows their job is to buy your home and solve your problem. Grandview buys homes as is, no matter the condition of the property. You don't need to do any repairs, not even a clean out. Just leave the stress and the mess to us. So call us at 630-506-8282. That's 630-506-8282 or visit us at grandviewhomes.com.
Hi, my name's Christina Stumble and I own Farm Girl Flowers in San Francisco. With my Spark Cash Card from Capital One, I earn unlimited 2% cash back on all my business purchases. Last year, I redeemed $115,000 in cash back. Yeah, $115,000. And that doubled our digital marketing budget for the summer. Thanks to my Spark Card, we had our best summer yet. Imagine what the Spark Card from Capital One could do for your business. What's in your wallet?
Real Capital One customers pay for real stories. Credit approval required.
Be prepared for whatever Mother Nature throws at you this winter with a new Trane furnace from Abt. Trane, T-R-A-N-E, furnaces combine renowned reliability with energy efficiency, which saves you on heating costs, will give you the peace of mind that they'll work through the rough this winter. Excuse me. Plus, you're going to get installation from Abt's own certified techs, all available 24-7 emergency support when it matters the most. Go to Abt. Or call them at 847-544-2284. You can learn about the full lineup. You can also go to app.com and see what Trane does right there. App pleasing people since 1936. I don't know why I'm surprised every year when winter shows up.
It's just...
It's not new. But, like, you know, I wore shorts Sunday, and I'm thinking, Well, this will be the last time I wear shorts this year.
It's still hard. Every time it happens, it's hard. Doesn't matter.
But it happens every year.
I know, but you know, it's still, you don't really ever get used to it.
But it comes in, you know, it's like the five stages of grief.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite at acceptance yet. Like this morning, it was cold enough to wear a windbreaker, like this coat I have on. And I decided that, well, there you go. That's another step. That's another step to the end, the
now,
end being winter.
Anger. Anger is coming as well, right?
Yeah. Well, there, let's see. It's denial. Mm-hmm. I was in denial. That's why I wear shorts on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Anger. Like, I'm annoyed that I can only wear shorts one more time. Bargaining. That means, well, maybe I'll have another chance.
Mm-hmm.
And depression. Depression. I'm really sad that I can't wear shorts anymore. Oh, and then acceptance. It's
yes.
winter.
Denial,
and
isolation, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Yep. You're right.
Well, you added one.
But
you made it 6 days.
You also need to find some of the positives that come with this. Like, for instance, one of the things that I do to make myself feel better is you can go to bed earlier now. Because in the summertime, when it's still light at 9 o'clock at night, it's so hard to go to bed.
Yeah. I love sweaters. I love fall. I love boots, like tall boots.
Me too.
But I don't love
the cool
static
stuff.
Electricity, but I love like a cozy sweater and then like a nap on the couch with a blanket.
I don't snuggling. Feel. Listen, I don't feel enough like a child going to bed at 8 o'clock now. So
I love soups and chili and casseroles.
Yeah, I love it being 58 and having a bedtime.
A hot chocolate and a hot toddy, even better.
Yeah. Texters continue to pound in at 312-981-7200 on the teacher strike. Here's a few of these from the 708. How can class size be guaranteed when buildings don't have enough classrooms? Sometimes there's a flux of sixth graders and the number grows to over 30, but not enough to warrant another teacher and there isn't space in the building. This is a common issue. I would say, Steve, that that's one of the big questions that has to be resolved in how do you enforce a blanket agreement when schools are different?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think, you know, when you have an issue like the one that you just described there, perhaps you lower the class sizes of the other classes that you're involved with and then create that additional class. And so all of the classes are smaller. That might be one way to deal with that, as opposed to just having a class of six kids in it. But you're right. It, the staffing issues are different at every school, and that's a struggle for anybody who's trying to put something in writing on that.
312, what are high school kids going to do when they get to college and they have 300 kids in class? The class size thing is not about the kids being stressed out about the size of the class. It's about the teachers being able to actually teach your kids when class sizes get too big. 847. Maybe, just maybe, the teachers realized that Elizabeth Warren was coming in and that'd be great for national exposure, and they decided not to make any more progress. Well, that's probably the best conspiracy theory of the day. Chalk that one up. Is she in town yet, Steve, do we know?
I don't know if she's in town yet. I don't know her specific schedule, but she is scheduled.
I thought you shot her with a tranquilizer gun so you could track her.
And I'm always hesitant to give the exact movements of some of these high-profile
sure.
people because you don't want nuts going out and doing something, but she is supposed to be here mid-morning at one of the schools at DePriest Elementary.
815, does the mayor's daughter attend a Chicago public school? Just wondering. I don't know the answer to that. Anybody on the show know the answer to that?
I don't know either.
Yeah. 773, maybe 2% a year raises. The rest of the money goes for the social issues the teachers are fighting for. I think the money's agreed on. It's just
yeah.
a question of whether or not the social issue thing it has a place in a discussion like this.
Yeah. Never been about the salary for the teachers.
And 847, how about taking the empty classrooms in the declining enrollment schools, making them living quarters for the homeless? And they can stay as long as their child attends school. Possible subsidies for food from the government would engage the community. It's not the worst idea I've ever heard. You know, taking these empty school buildings and actually refurbing them for homeless students and other folks.
They said some of the other issues that still need to be addressed, other than the class size and staffing, or wages for the district's support staff as well, and then for some of the veteran teachers.
773, I've never heard this. Can you explain why some of the CPS money goes to Naperville School District? That can't be true. Why would CPS money go to the burbs? That's probably a confusion about the allocation of funds and how wealthy suburban schools maybe are getting more than the fair share, in quotes, that schools in the city should get. I don't know what else it would be.
Yeah, I don't know how any of Chicago money would end up in a suburban school district. That doesn't seem right.
And 815, I'm on the side of the kids. Fall sport athletes, especially high school seniors who've now lost their season. AP students who start with almost a month less of instruction before the exam due to the CPS start date. Stop telling me it's about the students when the union is trying to legislate social policy. 312-981-7200. Coming back. All right, coming up next hour, Rich McHugh. Rich, a big shot producer at NBC and resigned NBC News because he felt that he and Ronan Farrow were lied to about the Harvey Weinstein Me Too story and whether or not they could go forward with it when they were told to stand down. We'll get to that coming up. This Sunday is Hockey Fights Cancer Night at the United Center. And you're invited, of course, to get some tickets or contribute online. Amy kicks off with Eddie Olchek, a cancer survivor, and the Hockey Fights Cancer ambassador and forward Adam Burrish hosting the Purple Carpet at the United Center. It starts as early as 3:45. Atrium doors open at 2:30 for the event. And again, follow this all at ChicagoBlackhawks.com, Blackhawks.com. First 10,000 fans get an Eddie Olchek bobblehead. And Eddie, of course, is a friend of the show and one of your great Blackhawks of all time. Now, Dave, you know this. When I was in Prague, what did I tell you when I came back? I said, yeah, of course I wish we'd beaten the Flyers. But holy mata, this guy's exciting.
You did.
He's
that was the
everywhere.
First, he was the first player whose name you mentioned to me.
Everywhere. Well, he's standing by on the phone right now just to prove he's everywhere.
He
joins us now for Breakfast with the Blackhawks. Good morning, Ole.
Good morning, guys.
You are one fast dude. At one point, I looked to my left. He was sitting next to me. He's just everywhere. Listen, I think you're a great addition to the team, and I love the fact that you've got that hockey instinct. You got that puck knowledge. You seem to know where you need to be.
Well, that's a big part of the game, I guess. Like you look at the best players in the league. That's something they do, and it really helps you. You kind of keep focusing on that and trying to position yourself really well on the ice. It helps you so much.
Now, when you were on the Penguins, you and Phil Kessel, I mean, you had something in common you probably didn't want. You're both cancer survivors. You want that part, but not the cancer.
Yeah, you definitely didn't want that.
So, tell me about your journey, your story.
Well, yeah, I was that was my second year, and I was really coming after first year, really excited to get the second year going, and you know, just trying to build on the good first year I had, and then in the team physicals before a year, I found out I got a little lump in my neck, and we really didn't think anything out of it, but I ended up getting some more tests done, and it ended up being a tumor, and it was in my thyroid, and that kind of scared me a little bit.
Of course.
They're always, it's never easy, but I was really lucky with it. Mine was found really early. It was pretty much an easy protocol and easy procedure we did. And I was in and out. I was out for 3 weeks of hockey, and after that I was done and back playing. So I was really lucky, but it really got me some perspective what people are going through. I think how lucky I was. Like I can just imagine what other people are going through with more serious types of cancers.
Well, it has to be a great feeling for you to be part of Hockey Fights Cancer Night coming up this Sunday, and also to be here coming from a franchise where you had success, a two-time Stanley Cup champion, to a franchise where you're playing with guys who certainly know that feeling. Do you see some similarities between the guys you played with in Pittsburgh who had success and won Stanley Cups and the guys you're playing with now?
Absolutely. I think you're going to see similarities up and down the organization. I think the way they treat the players, the way the day-to-day life here is, everything is towards winning. And players, you see the core group who's been here for all those three cups, and you can see their work ethic and how they handle those sims every day too. It's just everything's towards winning, and that's the way it should be. And I think when you talk about similarities, that's a big one.
I assume you've played for older coaches, maybe not somebody as young as Colleton, who's not that many years done from being a player himself. Is that a different deal?
Well, everybody's different, and you definitely have a different different approach to it, but he's a smart coach. I mean, it's just the way his systems, all his hockey mind, he's a smart coach, and I think he handles the room really well.
As you look at the first couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks of the season now, since that face-off against the Flyers on October 4th in Prague, what do you see as the areas where this team has maybe started to get better and some areas where you still need to pick it up?
Yeah, well, you look at the games, they're all one-goal games, and that can be encouraging at the same time, but I think those are the things we got to be able to turn around and win those games. That's what good teams do. And obviously the special teams we have to get better at. But I think you can see that it's not all bad. We're doing a lot of good things out there. And it's just about winning those one goal games. And that's I think we're in a good spot.
How do you like Chicago so far?
Love it.
Got a favorite restaurant yet?
Well, I really like Purple Pig.
Yeah, look at you, Mr. Healthy.
Purple Pig is good.
Sure is.
So, well, we're glad you're here, man, and I'm very impressed. I know it's early, but you look like a perfect addition to this team, and there's chemistry and things that still have to come together. And you know what else there is, G, because you're a big hockey fan? Gelling.
I am.
You got to gel.
Yeah, he's learning that he's fitting in nicely.
Oh, yeah, but the other guys, they got to gel, too.
Oh, yeah,
there's got to be some gelling.
Yes, it's about the energy and synergy, Ollie, the synergy.
Ollie, stand by. She's about to pull a muscle trying to find a cliche. All right, so here's the deal. Again, Atrium Doors open at 2:30 for Hockey Fights Cancer Night for the Purple Carpet event. Gates United Center to follow at 4:30. First 10,000 fans get the Eddie Olczyk bobblehead. By the way, Eddie's going to hang around after that ceremony and sign his new memoir, Beating the Odds in Hockey and Life. Is Eddie not asked to come on yet? Viv, you got to get Eddie Olczyk on. It's very difficult. You have to actually call him and say, would you like to come on? And then he'll say yes. But get that book, Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life, because Eddie's a great story. Hockey Fights Cancer Night. The jerseys the guys wear in the pregame are going to be autographed and auctioned off online to benefit various local cancer-related organizations and the Chicago Blackhawks Foundation. That will start Sunday night and run through Monday afternoon at noon. At any rate, Ole, I look forward to talking to you a lot this season, and welcome to the Blackhawks and to Chicago.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You're
awesome.
Doing great.
Thanks. Yeah, yes. Good dude. And congratulations mostly on the success of beating cancer.
Yes.
I think
he's
much bigger than that.
He's doing fabulous.
And what you're saying, Steve, you're a professional. How do you follow the great story of Ole Mata? Well, obviously, with a great story of Orion Samuelson and pumpkin patches.
Ooh.
They go on a little early today to make room for Rich McHugh, the producer who quit NBC News over the Ronan Farrow controversy, and getting their story spiked on that creep Harvey Weinstein. Oh, I'm sorry if Harvey's listening. I didn't mean to offend you. The Steve Cochran Show continues on 720 WGN.
Well, I got my own plane. The fuel's rather smelly. Runs of corn on the cob, soybeans and pork belly. I'm a legend on GM, both the radio and telly. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Big O. How are you, sir?
Good morning to you. Doing well this morning in desert in Scottsdale, Arizona. Spending a few weeks here, meeting with the doctors at Mayo and having a good time. Weather behaving pretty well. It's into the 80s and 90s during the day. 59 right now at the airport here in Phoenix. So having a good day, and hope you all are too.
This is the weird time of year where we're sort of on a par with Arizona. In about 15 minutes from now, they'll continue to have livable temperatures and will be sub-zero. So that's why O is in the desert. That and the other reasons you already mentioned.
So we want to talk pumpkins this morning?
Well, first off, correct me if I'm wrong. Illinois is the top pumpkin producer in the country? Yep. Did we lose the line? I thought I heard a click.
I can confirm that.
I love seeing all the pumpkin weighing
We got them back in.
Competitions where they weigh the pumpkins, and sometimes the pumpkins are as large as a tiny house.
Well, you know how
pumpkins weigh a lot. They're really heavy.
And there's different ways of scaling things. So I don't want to take credit for this, but pumpkins are actually judged by Steve heads. So they go, that pumpkin is the size of 12 Steve Cochran heads.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that's impressive.
That would be a big pumpkin. Be a very, very large pumpkin. We're trying to get Orion back online here. We lost his
Are you going to carve out pumpkins with the...
You know, Abigail's at a point now where she might enjoy that, yeah.
I've been seeing that a lot. You know, a lot of people have pumpkin gathering parties.
Let me ask you this, Mary Vandeveld, with grandchildren of your own, are yours at pumpkin carving stage yet?
Well, she's like 2 and a half, almost 3. But yeah, I think she just likes to stick her hand in the goop, you know? That's the fun part. Don't you like it? The stringy goop? And...
Yeah, the pumpkin brains.
Yeah.
Yeah, taking out the pumpkin brains.
That's the fun part.
We use it on phone. Okay, we're going to go to the phone here. All right, sorry about that, Big O. I don't know what happened there, but welcome back.
Oh.
Well, that didn't sound good.
No.
That was a doink.
Sure didn't.
That was a doink.
Apparently, all lines to Arizona are down.
Sunny Arizona.
Sunshine delays, yes. Mm.
You know, it'd be great is if we just, like, everybody got super quiet. We just waited.
Well, no. Well, it's a little bit of a dance.
Big O could be napping. He could take one of his quick naps he likes to take.
Big O was going to give us information, and we're going to get him back in a second here, on pumpkin patches here in Illinois. And if you go to pumpkinpatch.patch.org.com, yes, got him back one more time. All right, we're going to try this one more time. You know, Owen, 58 plus years of doing this, I've never had so much trouble trying to talk to you.
Well, I've had problems, too. I don't know what's happening to the desert, but maybe the cool temperatures. It's only 59 here this morning, and it'll get up to 80 or 5 or 90 before the day is over. But it's clear, desert blue sky and beautiful, and they even grow pumpkins in Arizona, but nowhere near what we grow in Illinois. We are far and away number one pumpkin-producing state in the nation. And there are 5 states that produce about 40% of pumpkin acres here in the U.S., Illinois, followed by Pennsylvania, Indiana, Texas, and California. That's according to the U.S. Census of Agriculture. But the two questions that we get most often is a pumpkin a fruit or a vegetable? And it's both, so you can say yes to that. And then questions come in saying, well, is it a cucumber, or is it a squash, or is it a pumpkin? Well, it's all of the above, so that's pretty much the answer to that question. And the thing about pumpkins and the squash, they're both vine crops, and you'll find cucumbers and muskmelons and other products like that coming off the vines. And so if you want to have a pumpkin, call it a pumpkin. If you want to have a squash, call it a squash. But here's the big thing, Steve, because we didn't talk about this year on corn. You know, we normally do corn porn, and we didn't do that this year.
Right.
But pumpkins are much the same. The pumpkin produces a male flower, and it produces a female flower. The male flower quickly dies and goes away, but the female flower lives to produce a pumpkin.
You know, it sounds like the pumpkin is very busy socially. It's got a lot going on. Now, the pumpkin patches themselves, there's a million of them around. Everybody has their own traditions. I drive by Gobert's, you know, at least a couple times a week. What makes a great pumpkin? Should you have a squishy spot in it, or should it be nice and firm?
I think it should be nice and firm, particularly if you're going to carve it, and that takes a firm pumpkin. And there are some great artists out there dealing with pumpkins, and I'm amazed every year at some of the designs that they come up with. And then there are the pies that we make from pumpkins, and of course the pumpkin flour is actually a delicacy, but it doesn't last very long, so you have to consume them that quickly. And then pumpkin seeds are also popular, so you get a lot of products off the pumpkin, and it's really quite a crop. And we did have a disease a few years ago that really hampered production. That pretty much has been brought under control, so I think we're okay on that as well.
All right, so we should all go to our local pumpkin purveyor, our pumpkin proprietor, our pumpkin people, and spend a little money and have fun with your family. It's one of the great family events you can do. A little cider, a little donuts, a little pumpkin action.
You bet. And pumpkin donuts. And, of course, you mentioned Gobert's years ago on WGN when we would broadcast live from a pumpkin farm and do Pumpkin Fest. We picked the Gobert farm. And, of course, they're probably about 4 miles away from my house in Huntley, Illinois, on Highway 47, just south of the interstate. But there are pumpkin farms all over the place. And I agree with you. Get out and buy pumpkin and carve it and make a pie and do all of the other things that you do make with pumpkins.
All right, my friend. Thank you. Don't take any more calls today. It's far too dangerous.
Yeah, I can tell that, and I'm going to call the Secret Service right now and get it checked out.
I think that's probably a good call. We're coming back with the headlines next. Let's talk for a second about what is the Me Too generation, the Me Too story, the Me Too situation here at the end of 2019. You know we're 2 years deep on this now? You realize that, G?
No.
2 years ago, all of this really got inflamed and blown up into what we now know is an absolute epidemic across the country. I believe the behavior of men in many ways has changed. I believe this story has done a lot of good. The problem is when you have a story that can do a lot of good, and it's not aired by the people that employ you. So here's what we know. Great journalists gather news. Sources are confirmed. The story's vetted, and then the story's run, unless it's spiked. This almost never happens. It certainly isn't supposed to happen. And NBC News killed the Harvey Weinstein story that Ronan Farrow and Rich McHugh did because they didn't want it to run. Why? Well, let's ask Rich directly, and you can read all about this in Vanity Fair and in Ronan Farrow's new book, Catch and Kill. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you coming on. I hope that was a fair summation.
I think so. Yes.
So as you lay out in Catch and Kill, you guys go out, you do this work over the course of what, 8 or 9 months?
Yeah, we that's about right. We started in, I think it was about December of 2016. And by February, we had sat down and interviewed the actress Rose McGowan. And she'd gone on the record with us and told us, you know, after, when the cameras turned off, but she was still on the record that Harvey Weinstein, she alleged that he had raped her years earlier.
Right.
And so once we had that, we tried to continue gathering evidence and materials. And over the course of the next couple months, we amassed a lot. And we came into possession of this audio tape where Weinstein himself admits to sexually assaulting this model, Amber Gutierrez.
And that's the famous famous Italian hallway, or the Italian actress in the hallway, where he says something pathetic like, "Come on, everybody does this."
Correct. Okay. Yeah. And so to listen to the audio itself was just, for me personally, it was chilling because we saw instantly what all these women had been through
right.
in those private meetings. And so when we had that, I knew it was a little bit scary, to be honest, because I knew we were then in possession of something that was most likely the beginning of the end of Harvey Weinstein. And
you knew what a big deal he was. This is one of the biggest money makers in Hollywood. And you also knew, before you knew what Lack and Oppenheimer were about to do to you, that there certainly was this history of corporations being afraid of certain things. 60 Minutes shut down the Jeffrey Wigand big tobacco story. But on the other yep. side of that, The Post, remember the Tom Hanks Meryl Streep movie from last fall? It was all about the Pentagon Papers, where the paper could have been lost, and The Post ends up running the story. So the right thing to do is to run the story. So the obvious answer is, why shoot it down? What was NBC afraid of?
Well, it's a good question. I think I think Ronan Farrow, my partner on the story, does an excellent job of laying it out in his book, Catch and Kill. If you haven't read it, I would recommend that everybody read it. It's a it's incredible. And what I tried to lay out in the piece I wrote for Vanity Fair was, you know, if you just connect the dots to what we were working on, from what we were working on all summer, and the spirit in which they kind of tried to stop us, there was pauses, there was, you know, let's wrap our arms around this thing, let's we can't go do that shoot. We were ordered not to go do several shoots and interviews. And it all began to, we began to realize you know, our own news organization does not have our back on this. So not only were we trying to pull, you know, sensitive information about this, about Harvey Weinstein, and convince victims to go on the record, but we were, you know, kind of internally a bit at war with our own news organization, trying not to let these women even let on to that, because if they didn't think that we could get this across the finish line, they would never have spoken to us.
Yeah, and Andy Lack starts a little victim blaming. Oppenheim and Lack both blame the two of you at one point, even absurdly claiming, well, we didn't run the TV interviews because you guys own them. No, reporters right. do not own the material. That's why the story didn't run initially. At any rate, G, your question.
Well, I mean, Rich, obviously now in hindsight, but you kind of didn't realize that while during your journalistic efforts that there was an entire news story that was unfolding in NBC, and of course that had to do with Matt Lauer. So do you think that was ultimately
correct.
The reason why they were trying to...
I do. I think they're inextricably linked, and, you know, Ronan lays it out in the book again, but I think we realized that right at the time that they were killing the story, there was something else at work, and we never really could figure out. We had our suspicions, but we never really could put our finger on it until now. And, you know, thanks to Ronan for unearthing some of these emails and documents and documenting the settlements that were going on behind the scenes with between NBC and victims, some actual victims of Matt Lauer, and the amount of calls between executives at NBC and Harvey Weinstein himself in the days leading up to them killing our story. It's all pretty clear. So I don't know how anybody reads that account and my own account and believes what's coming out of NBC these days.
Well, you recount the real type of jeopardy that you were in. It was shocking to find that your cell phone, you believe, was hacked. Also, your home in New Jersey was broken into. You have a family as well with young daughters. This was a very scary time for you, and there was a lot at risk.
It was. I'm not going to lie about it. It was terrifying. And it, you know, it continues. It's a funny thing. You know, just last week, someone was trying to break into my emails, and so it's not over. And that's the weird part about this. But there was a lot at stake, and you know, for Ronan and I, we had promised a lot of people along the way that we were going to get their story out, and for you know, that was of utmost importance to me. Because, you know, for some stories, networks tell you, you know, don't do this. You know, there's another story that would be better. But this one, the stakes were so high that we had decided, you know, deep into it, that we were just not stopping at any cost.
Yeah,
and that's
and,
what our network wanted us to do. They were basically ordering us to stand down from interviews and then eventually just to stand down for good.
And
that's not right.
As we said at the top, that's not the way journalism works. And frankly, that's why fake news is such a destructive term, because when you create this sort of lack of confidence in legitimate news organizations, as NBC has been and should always be, they got some splaining to do here, Lucy, as this story continues. So I'm amazed to hear you're still under the gun and under threat because you resigned over this.
Yeah, I did. I mean, that was even a year ago. But I feel, you know, I don't feel this is over. And I think, you know, the public is starting to learn about what happened and what took place at NBC. But there's still, you know, NBC is saying, you know, hasn't apologized for any part of this, for, you know, which is kind of shocking to me. And they've even blamed some of the women that
right.
we... you know, had in our story and basically called them liars, which is the most astounding thing of all.
So
it continues.
I want people to read Ronan's book, but if this is about the Matt Lauer knowledge, is the, and I don't, it sounds conspiratorial here, but in the big picture, does that mean there was concern that the story would blow up big enough that the Lauer thing would be exposed, or that Weinstein, who is known to do anything that's in Harvey Weinstein's interest, had Matt Lauer information and would release it unless NBC helped?
I think Ronan documents that part of it, you know, very, very carefully. You know, Weinstein's relationship with American media and stories that were being published about Matt Lauer at the time. So I'll let the reporting in his book,
that's fair,
you know, speak for itself on that. But I would say it's all of it. Yes, I think NBC was terrified. I know they knew. I think there was just a general apprehension that grew into an outright fear as the more reporting we did.
This used to be the death knell for somebody that had the guts to do this, because you could work for one of the major news organizations or you were out. It's not that way anymore, though certainly the income is different at one level than the other. What's this done to your ability to be employed and your ability to support your family?
I think it actually, I don't think it has had any negative effect. You know, just the opposite.
I've had good to hear.
News, you know, networks calling and saying, come work for us. You know, some studio, some, you know, companies out in LA are wanting to work with me. And good. So I'm taking a step back and thinking, you know, where do I really want to work and what do I want to focus on? So I think it's, you know, the feedback has just been overwhelming, positive.
I got less than a minute here. Sorry, Rich. I got less than a minute here, G.
Yeah, just really quickly, Rich, I just wanted to know what you thought about Oppenheim coming out and kind of his memo that he sent out and sort of his effort at damage control based on what you and Ronan have revealed.
I think it's not surprising. You know, it's more of the same. It's the same thing that they've been saying from the beginning. And, you know, I told them initially, I said, if you're going to continue on this narrative, this is only going to get worse. I think it's best if everybody just comes to the table and says, we're sorry, we screwed up, and let's try and move on and apologize. But they weren't interested in doing that. And so I think the American public understands exactly what is going on. And it's not over yet.
Please say hello to Ronan. We'd love to have him on talking about the book as well. And and continue this story for
thank you for your work,
audience. Yeah, seriously, man. Because in this era of the term fake news being thrown around, this is the last thing you need. And this has to be stopped. And most importantly, for the women involved and this criminal, Harvey Weinstein, who spent the rest of his life in jail for this. And Oppenheim and Lack, based on Farrow's book, ought to be unemployable as well. So much more. As you said, Rich, the story continues. Anyway, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Rich McHugh, we agreed to come on at short notice there, and really no notice to come on and talk about it, but it's important, and you can read again about the story in Variety and certainly pick up the
Vanity
book, Catch
Fair.
And Bill.
Oh,
did
Vanity
I say
Fair.
Variety?
Yeah.
Vanity Fair. That's the second time I said Variety,
okay.
Wasn't it?
They're both great.
Did they both start with V?
Yes, they do.
It's in Vanity Fair, and Catch and Kill is a Ronan Farrow book. It's 9:51, and Bill and Wendy ahead at 10. G and I were just talking off the air, and frankly, the show interrupted us rudely right there.
I'm so sorry. I think I distracted you. That's okay. My fault. My bad.
Texters continue to chime in on the school strike. Bring in an arbitrator, says 708. We were told they cannot legally strike over staffing and class size, which is holding up a settlement. They also cannot add things to talk about. The mayor should have put on the brakes from the start. yes and no. We don't have time to get into all of that. Because we're out of time on the show. 224, more than 30 kids in a class, they have to have a teacher's assistant. 630, the CTU decided to strike when Lori Lightfoot won as mayor. 773, have the teachers decided to throw global warming in yet? 312, the question came up earlier, the mayor's daughter actually attends a Catholic school in the West Loop. 815, Elizabeth Warren's here. If she's so smart, let her negotiate. And one more, 920, high school specifically is not just about learning. It's about extracurricular experience and growing. Seniors are missing out on playoff games or band concerts and extracurricular activities. It could ruin their senior year experience, but certainly take away memories they won't have now for the rest of their lives. Those are valuable experiences in the strike costs. And it continues. And based on what we heard this morning, doesn't look like it's going to end tomorrow, the next day, or the day after that. It is 9:55. Bill and Wendy coming up, and Steve will be in the Northwestern Medicine. No, that's not Steve. Who's in the Jordan Burnfield? Who let him in? Jordan's a good dude. Jordan's in for Bertrand in a moment on 720 WGN. All right, 9:58. Couple of minutes away from the Bill and Wendy show. Where what will happen today? Well, they know. Tell us, won't you?
Well, Steve, Neiman Marcus every year puts out this fantasy gift list. And
which one, Neiman or Marcus?
Oh, well, I know about it.
Together. They work together on
this. Oh, they do?
Yeah, Neiman and Marcus together. So it's a lot of exciting items, none of which you could ever even imagine being able to afford.
Do they really exist, or is it all just made up?
No, they really exist.
They exist.
It's fake, torture.
Fake presents.
Right. Who really wants some of this stuff?
I do.
She does.
She wants all of it.
Yeah.
Do you? Can you think of one off the top of your head?
No.
Okay. Let's check. Nope. Can you think of anything off the top of your head?
It's like sail around the world on a private yacht with like diamonds for breakfast.
There's a lot of that kind of thing. I know. You don't remember Denise Richards, the actress?
All right. I might be interested in that.
You should never eat diamonds for breakfast. Yes.
What Denise Richards does the thing where she helps train your animal. You have Denise Richards comes to your house and trains your dog or cat.
Well, if I can think of one reason to have Denise Richards at the house, that would
be
that would
be the one.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have Steve Dale come.
Oh, yeah. He would do it. It's cheaper to have Steve Dale come by.
So that's coming up. And then afterwards,
then you're a recap
going,
of it.
Afterwards, you're going to the new Nextar Benefits meeting.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Right. And Sense Around.
Oh, that's probably not for the listeners, though.
Oh, no, no, no. It's just private. Oh,
okay. I hope you enjoyed today's broadcast. I know we enjoyed bringing it to you, regardless of the outcome. And we'll be back tomorrow, and we'll do it again. I believe that starts around 6 a.m. I'll be here by 5:59:30, and I look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, the music's about to start, and the Bill and Wendy Show will come on right after that.
Serving the great Midwest from Chicago.